Hey ECE Solutionary members, this is Christy and I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about how to pick the right assessment. I get this question all the time, especially as it pertains to eligibility. So we will use the purpose of eligibility as our case example, but let me start off kind of big picture in terms of what I mean by picking the right assessment. And if you could see me, I would be using air quotes around the right. So there's several golden rules when it comes to early childhood assessment, but let's just talk about the first golden rule, which is that we use tests or measures or assessments, whatever you want to call them, for the purposes for which they were designed. You can also translate that to, were the scores and interpretations that are made from this assessment validated for this particular purpose, this particular population of children? That's going to be a hard standard for us to kind of live up to, our golden rule not to break. But we'll come back to that. But that's your first and foremost, is to say, was this assessment designed for the purposes for which I'll be using it? In early childhood, we have six primary assessment purposes. And you can learn about each of these in a book that I co-authored with Dr. Jennifer Grissom Brown. It's called Assessing Young Children in Inclusive Settings, the Blended Practices Approach. And it's published by Brooks Publishing. And we go chapter by chapter, purpose by purpose. But generally speaking, there are six purposes. The first is developmental and behavioral screening, which is different than universal screening, which is different than some of the other screenings that we do in special education. This is really the question that we're asking is, should the child be tested further, and that's a developmental and behavioral screening. Second purpose is eligibility for early intervention or early childhood special ed. The third purpose is to plan instruction. The fourth purpose is to revise instruction. The fifth purpose is to engage in program evaluation. Where you see that is when you're looking for quality indicators, meeting some sort of stars or levels or some sort of external threshold of credibility. And then the sixth purpose is accountability. And the place you see that most is with the OSEP child outcomes, OSEP standing for the Office of Special Education Program. And those are those three outcomes that we look at for students that have been identified with a disability, either IFSP or IEP. So those are the six purposes. Today we'll use eligibility as the example. But just keep in mind, the golden rule is, was this assessment designed for this purpose, one of these six? It's hard for a tool to do more than one thing well, so just keep that in mind. The next sort of thing that we can think about is, does the assessment that, okay, we've decided it meets this first requirement of it was designed for the purpose for which we're going to use it, does it meet standards? And so each purpose has some different nuances in terms of what makes it a quality instrument for that purpose. For example, if we're looking at developmental and behavioral screeners, we might need to look more closely at sensitivity and specificity. But in general, if you want to look very broadly, you can turn to the Division for Early Childhood Recommended Practices and look at the assessment standards to give you something to compare and contrast. You can also use the eight standards that my colleagues, Dr. Steve Bagnato and Dr. Jack Nisworth and I have unpacked and outlined in our other book called Linking Authentic Assessment and Early Childhood Intervention, Best Measures for Best Practices. And in the linking book, we have eight standards that we offer up to the field to use as a way to compare apples with apples, so that you're not just saying, is this tool better than that tool, and just everyone's opinion. It's really compared to an actual standard that has a definition. And in the linking book, there's an actual survey that you can complete that would allow you to rate. You can also see in sort of a consumer report kind of way how different assessments were rated across the eight standards. So we have our golden rule, was that designed for this purpose? Next question, does it meet some standards? At a bare minimum, the DEC recommended practice standards. Going down another layer, does it meet the eight linking standards? And then going down another layer, does it meet sort of the threshold for quality for the purpose that this particular tool is going to be used for? So let's say you get through all of that. Now let's look at it in real life. So let's take eligibility. That's one of the six purposes. So people might argue this point with me, and they might say it's a matter of semantics. But in general, I'm going to argue that there are no instruments that were validated, the instrument itself in terms of the scores and the interpretations were not validated to determine eligibility. Now, we have things like the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM-5. We have state criteria. We have federal criteria around different labels. We have different ways to say this child has a specific learning disability or an expressive communication disorder or specific things around reading that we might diagnose issues around comprehension or fluency. So there's kind of little pockets of places where we have instruments and procedures that help us diagnose different disorders or mental conditions or delays. But in general, in this really big way, especially when we look at preschool special ed and we say, is the child eligible? Do they qualify? What we really get into is, do we have an instrument that produces a score that meets the criteria that our state holds as the gatekeeper? So if it's 1.5 standard deviations below the mean on a norm reference test, that becomes sort of the criteria to say that you're eligible. But these instruments, the Patel Developmental Inventory, the Bailey, these were not determined, they were not designed to determine if a child was eligible. They were often designed to determine if there was a difference, or rather a deficit or delay, in the child's developmental quotient, or if you use something like the Wechsler, their intelligence was kind of that discrepancy. So there can be a discrepancy, but it doesn't mean that you're absolutely eligible, nor does it mean that you qualify. So these words get changed and interchanged and a hot mess. But pretend that we're going to just, you know, ignore the golden rule and use instruments to determine eligibility. And we're going to base that upon our criteria for getting the gate to open, which is usually in preschool, some amount of a standard deviation. So let's talk about the word standard deviation versus the word standardized versus the word norm referenced. So oftentimes people will use the phrase standardized norm reference as if it's one construct. It's absolutely two different constructs. Standardization is really what an instrument goes through in a measurement process to allow it to distribute scores across a distribution that we often call a bell curve or a normal distribution. Standardized means that we have to use the same procedures, same material, same script, same order, same timing, same whatever for each student that we administer the instrument to. So norm referenced tests are often have undergone standardization, but they don't have to be standardized. Then when you think about norm referenced, you hear the word normed and you hear the word referenced. So the norm is referring to that bell curve, that normal distribution, and that comes from a classical test theory approach to measurement. There are other theories like item response theory that doesn't use that normal distribution kind of way of mean versus standard deviation. Then when you think about referencing, you can either reference a child's performance to that norm that has been undergone the standardization process to figure out where's the mean and where's the child fall in relation to that mean, or you can reference the child's performance to a criterion, and that's where we get the phrase criterion reference. Most states don't allow a criterion reference to be the sole determinant. In fact, we shouldn't use any single instrument to be the sole determinant, but oftentimes we give more weight to the norm reference because we have to produce a score that gives a mean and a standard deviation. In some states, we're also encouraged or required to administer a criterion referenced assessment along with the norm reference. So we're now comparing the child to that normal distribution and we're comparing them to a criterion. In neither of these instances does the instrument need to be standardized. But oftentimes the way our state policies or procedures are written, it will just say it has to be a standardized norm reference. What they really mean is that this norm reference tool needs to have undergone standardization, and we want a systematic process for determining eligibility, but we don't necessarily have to use a standardized tool. So, that all said, you need to get all of that kind of figured out. So you need to read your state rules carefully to understand what kind of instruments can be used, what kind of tests can be used to produce the type of scores that go into that body of evidence. Sometimes you might live in a state that actually has more flexibility than you might have imagined. So I just used the phrase body of evidence. That is the threshold in the state of Colorado. So it's not about the performance on a test, though a child's performance on a test can be part of the body of evidence. In other states, it's going to say the child must receive a score that is 1.5 standard deviations below the mean in 2 areas of development, or 2 standard deviations below the mean in 1 area of development. Then, to convolute things further, you might live in a state where early intervention for birth to 3, we don't use standard scores, we use percent delays, sorry. So not a percentile rank, but a percent delay, which is a made-up score. So it gets really hard to go from early intervention to early childhood special ed because we're talking about a made-up score called a percent delay. We're trying to get a very specific score called a standard score that we can compare to the normal distribution. Okay, so let's back up really quickly. You want to pick a tool that was designed for the purpose for which you'll use it. There are 6 purposes. In the case of eligibility, we're almost always going to break that rule. There are very few exceptions, but if you live in a state where you can create a body of evidence, it's not hard to break. You won't be breaking that rule because you can use instruments that were designed to say if the child had some sort of delay that was keeping them from accessing, participating, making progress, that you really need to do specially designed instruction to support this learner. So you're really going to be able to use the word eligibility in its broadest term, which is to say, do you have needs that would benefit from an IEP or would only be addressable through an IEP process, versus this notion of we're just piecemealing assessments together that were really designed to identify some sort of mental disorder, some sort of language disorder, some sort of categorical label, but not really qualify for special ed. So again, matter of semantics. Then you want to look at your instrument and say, does it meet the standards? So when it comes to eligibility, my recommendation, in full disclosure, I'm an author on the AEPS, but from an objective perspective, I've spent about 20 years researching assessment in early childhood, including the AEPS, and this is the reason I would suggest you consider it. So the AEPS stands for the Assessment, Evaluation, and Programming System. So the A is really about planning and revising instruction. The E, in this instance, is really about comparing the child's performance to him or herself over time, not evaluation in terms of eligibility, but we'll come back to that. And then programming is that idea that this is for instructional use, and then it's a whole system, meaning that it's linked to other purposes of assessment. It's certainly linking assessment and instruction as one. So the AEPS, the Assessment, Evaluation, and Programming System, when we hold it to the things I've just mentioned, we start off with the golden rule. It was not originally designed to determine eligibility. However, in the last several years, it has undergone revisions that we have evidence that the scores and the interpretations made can corroborate eligibility decisions, so that if the team is creating that body of evidence saying that this child has a delay and that that delay is something that could be addressed through specially designed instruction, the AEPS has scores that would help in that answering that question. It is built on item response theory. So like I was mentioning, it doesn't use the classical test theory, so it's not norm referenced. is what we call criterion referenced. So if your state requires a norm reference tool, the AAPS cannot replace that, but it can certainly become a strong player in the eligibility process. But there will still need to be something that produces a norm referenced, or what we call a standard score. If you live in a state that requires criterion reference, it's absolutely, or if it says curriculum based. So the AAPS does have scores, and you can make interpretations that were designed for the purpose of corroborating eligibility decisions. We often say corroborating because many states will not, again, allow you to move forward without that standard score. Then the next thing is those standards of practice. If you look at the DEC recommended practices, or you look at those 8 linking standards, you will see that the AAPS meets most, if not all. Now, you can look to see where, when I say most, if not all, there's some linking standards where it'll get a lower rating. Some people have trouble putting it into practice, and so it will get lower ratings in terms of social validity and things like that. But for the most part, it's one of the strongest assessments in early childhood in terms of having a strong evidence base. It will allow you to involve families, which is, for me, one of the critical standards. And it will also help you in the sense of writing better IEPs. And so that brings us so sort of the end part of this, which is one of the great things about the AAPS, is that it has what we call treatment validity. And this is not often required of any assessment, but in my opinion, should be really the type of validity that we expect of all assessments. And basically, treatment validity says, if we use this assessment, will the person we're using it with benefit? So will children and families benefit as a result from having administered this assessment? And we have some evidence that the AAPS will help you write better IEP goals. You can embed IEP goals more readily, and then children make progress when we embed instruction into daily routines around their individualized goals. So the AAPS is a good option for the eligibility process because you can say, yes, it was designed for this purpose, though that's got some little cautions depending on your state criteria. We also know that it meets all of the linking standards and the DEC recommended practice standards. Given how a team actually puts it into practice, it may falter in little bits and pieces of places. It absolutely has some evidence of treatment validity where other instruments will not, and then also links different assessment purposes. So it becomes a strong link between eligibility and program planning and program evaluation and accountability. So all of those, all but the screening and purpose, the AAPS helps with. So those 6 purposes, it is not a developmental and behavioral screening, but it can be used during eligibility. It can be used for planning instruction, for revising instruction, for program evaluation, and for, in particular, OSEP accountability. So for that reason, or those reasons, when a team says, what's the best tool to use for eligibility, one that rises to the top for me is the AAPS. But before you run out and go, oh, this will save, you know, and fix all our problems, you really need to step back and say, okay, side by side, A, which purpose are we trying to fix? Is it developmental and behavioral screening? Is it eligibility? Oh, yep, eligibility. Okay, was the tool that we're looking at and evaluating and considering designed for this purpose? Will the scores and interpretations, have they been validated for the purposes of eligibility? That one's the hardest one because there's kind of a hot mess in there. Does it meet at least DEC recommended practice standards, if not all 8 linking standards? Then do we understand our state rules? Do we understand the difference between standardized versus standardization? The difference between norm referenced and criterion referenced and curriculum based? Once we have our kind of brain all wrapped around that, we can begin to look through different assessments and then compare it to those standards and compare it to what we want to see as far as a change in practice.